Well, I learned real quick, as I said the last time. It only took me less than 3 weeks to find out that everything we have on prostitution and human trafficking is a bunch of bull. And I went into a room, and there they were the documents that showed how Pope Pius XII had been compromised. And what they did is they put pedophiles into the church under the guise of being priests, which they became. And the whole purpose of it was to infiltrate the church. And by compromising these people in the Vatican, it could be used to launder money and all these other illicit stuff being done by the shadow government and the world money changers. When John Paul I was killed, that happened 10 days after he gave a special dispensation to Father Ritter, me and my partner, to clean the pedophiles out of the church. He was murdered, and I ended up getting the informant who told me who was responsible for it.
With the world being so crazy, I have two great gift ideas to help you and your family stay safe. First, the Shockwave Torch. This tiny tool drops a 260-pound thug in 2 seconds. It packs so much power in such a small package, it's scary. Thank God it's got a safety on it. If you want to stay safe in a dangerous world, I promise the Shockwave Torch will help. Next, I want to show you the Light Defender Tactical Laser. It's a palm-sized device that drops attackers by shooting off electromagnetic radiation. It is legal in most of the U.S., but it has been banned inside 4 different states, and countries across the world have been banning it left and right. This might have something to do with the fact the military uses these devices in Afghanistan, Iraq, and other hostile zones to drop terrorists in their tracks. The U.S. Navy calls it the best emergency rescuing device, and it's so powerful it will even start fires with no matches or fuel required. Click the links below to learn more about the Shockwave Torch and the Light Defender Tactical Laser Tool. There would be great gifts for your loved ones and family to keep them safe in this crazy world. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have Detective Jimmy Boots Rothstein back to dig deeper into human intelligence and how corrupt psychopaths have used this powerful currency to compromise the Vatican and the church. This show is disturbing and shows the lengths the shadow government and a small group of psychopathic power brokers will go to accomplish their goals. It is important to recognize that there are good people in the Catholic Church, and they too are victims of this evil scheme, and it should not be assumed that the entire Catholic community is guilty of this incredibly evil behavior. Before I get into this interview, I want to remind you that this is the third episode in my series on human compromise and trafficking that I'm doing with Detective Jimmy Boots Rothstein. As such, the other two episodes will provide background information you may not have. In particular, the first episode may be very helpful because it gives you a background on how human intelligence and compromise is used to control powerful leaders in our world. Since my channel is currently being heavily censored, especially after I started running this series, you may have to go directly to my channel or website to find all the episodes. I have the link below for you to find that. Please share these videos with your social networks to help get the word out. Also, please consider supporting my channel by joining Patreon, where you can get many exclusive interviews and free books. I have the link below. Now let's get into the interview with Detective Jimmy Boots Rothstein. Detective Rothstein, thank you so much for meeting with me again.
Well, thank you for coming here. I was wondering if you'd come back. Usually they don't.
Well, I do. And I'll be coming back again.
Good. Thank you.
Let's talk about your last name a little bit. Let's start with that, because some people wonder if you have a Jewish background.
I don't know if I do or not, but I was raised a Catholic. This town was homesteaded by German Catholics coming out of Prussia. And our family, as far back as I've been able to find, were Catholic.
So the Rothstein name is just random.
My partner's name was Rosenthal. He was an Irish Catholic. So, you know, people assume things by what they don't know history. I don't know that part of history. But also in my work, I dealt with other Jewish sounding names that weren't Jewish. They were a different, you know. Oh, give me a break.
Does it matter?
No, it don't matter. The only thing is that today, if we speak about the church thing, is that I did what I did because I was a Catholic. If you're a real Catholic, you won't allow this stuff to happen. And the very truth is the church has not even told the truth on why all these things are happening to the church. And in my investigations, I just touched a little bit last week on it, so I understand that's what you want to talk about today.
Yeah, I want to talk about the problems in the church and then why they got you involved. But let's talk about what the problem was that they eventually got you into.
Well, it started when I first became a cop. And as I told you, I was put on working prostitution. And shortly after that, a man by the name of Ed Skull Murphy took, as I would say, knew I was honest, I had integrity, which was a special trait. And he made sure that Cardinal Spellman, who was the cardinal in New York and one of the most powerful men that there was, so that he wouldn't stop me or bother me, he gave me Jack the Sailor, who was a victim of Cardinal Spellman. He got caught running away with the cardinal's shoes, and so that had compromised Cardinal Spellman, and I didn't have to worry with that information. He wasn't going to touch me.
It was human intelligence.
Yeah.
And that's when I first learned about that. You got to remember, I was born and raised here in St. Martin. What did I know about that? Well, I learned real quick, as I said the last time. It only took me less than 3 weeks to find out that everything we have on prostitution and human trafficking is a bunch of bull. And the same thing when I got this, it alerted me. I said, wait a second, this card is compromised, you know. And that's when I found out what it was. It wasn't until 1971 when I received an anonymous phone call to go to the federal courthouse in New York to look at some documents. And, you know, it was understood you don't bring a camera, pencil, paper. And I have been in that courthouse many times. And I walked in there, and I forget what floor it was. There was nobody there. The floor was empty. Unheard of. And I went into a room, and there they were the documents that showed how Pope Pius XII had been compromised. Now, again, you got to understand that what I say is the real thing. He was compromised because he was gay. Now, gay doesn't mean you're a pedophile. In fact, nowhere were there any records or anything that ever showed that Pope Pius XII was a pedophile. He was gay. And in those days, remember, this was at the end of World War II, late 30s and 40s, when they compromised him. So this is how they were able to do it. And the name that was there was Jesus Angleton from our OSS CIA. And what they did is they put pedophiles into the church under the guise of being priests, which they became. And the whole purpose of it was to infiltrate the church. And that would be a program in itself to explain how that works. But this is what started it. That's when I first realized that this was all a setup.
So back in the mid-30s is when they started this whole program.
End of the 30s.
End of the 30s, right before World War II?
Just as in 30s into, I think the last document I saw was about dated 1943. Don't hold me, this was 1971.
So why did they, from everything that you've researched, why did they do this?
Why? Because remember, the church, the confessional is secret. And if you have an operation that is compromised, they needed human compromise. And by compromising these people in the Vatican, it could be used to launder money and all these other illicit stuff being done by the shadow government and the world money changers. And that's what they needed. And that's why Jesus Angleton's name was number one on the list of that. Later on, you will find, when you look at the Bella Dodd testimony, you can find it on the computer unless they've erased it again, but she would testify because Bishop Fulton J. Sheen had converted her. And she talked about how the communists had infiltrated the church the same way to put the pedophiles in. And then years later, there's another guy, AA1025. Now, I just found out this morning that there's a book written about him. And they've tried to discredit him, except many of the things that AA1025 says were also in those documents that I saw in the courthouse that time. And then later on, there was a Bishop Nilitza. And my informants on that was Father Gruner and Father Kramer, which gets later into the 70s, 60s, and 70s in that. And I personally interviewed Gruner and Kramer, who told me how they didn't even know that their problems came when they reported that this guy was bringing pedophiles into the church.
Well, let's rewind a little bit. The Catholic Church has always had a reputation of, like, during the Crusades, and there's been popes during the years that have been really bad guys. How does this differ from maybe some of the other corruption they might have had in the past?
Well, it's not different. It's all one, you know, it's all intermingled. One perpetuates the other, you know, and this is why. And again, the reason why, I don't know if I was picked, because there was a point where the coincidences stopped with me. Like, who would call me to give me this information? I don't know. Many of the things I was doing, as I explained in the last interview, I was cut loose. And my job was to find out what was really going on. The New York Police Department learned they had to find out what was really happening. And that's what I was doing. And this is why I did what I did. And the thing about the church is, as I said at the very beginning, how can you be a Catholic and allow this to happen? I'm not a crusader, but as long as I was doing it, I said, this is horrible, what they're doing to the kids and that. And I also ended up with the informant. When John Paul I was killed, that happened 10 days after he gave a special dispensation to Father Ritter, me and my partner, to clean the pedophiles out of the church. He was murdered. And I ended up getting the informant who told me who was responsible for it. So this is jumping the gun a little bit, but just so people understand where this ends up at.
So who was the one that brought you in specifically to clean up the church or to figure it out?
Don't know. Never found out. Never, ever found out. All I know, what it started was a phone call.
And what did they say to you?
Go to room so-and-so at the federal courthouse.
Interesting. And that's when you found the documents.
Yep. Yep. There was no other. And the reason I got started in all of this, as I explained at first, was the most of the hookers came from this area that were in Times Square. It was known as the Minnesota Strip. And because I was from here, the captain decided I should take care of my own problems. So that's why they put me on this. This is how I originally got into it. And the next thing it just jumped, as I explained, I saved a hooker's life when the pimps came to call her, to kill her. And once you save somebody like that's life, you know, you'd be amazed how powerful that gets to be. And then all the girls and boys started knowing that they could trust me. And Skull Murphy, and you got to look him up, and I told you John Rubenstein has 200 hours of video and audio tapes of him. And if you look him up on the internet, you're going to see at what level he operated at.
And we're going to talk about him in the next segment.
Yes.
On Skull Murphy. Do you want to give a little brief of him? Because he's the one that helped you here.
Oh, Skull Murphy had been molested by his father, and he was put in a Franciscan orphanage in Brooklyn, where he was molested by two Franciscan brothers. And then when he got old enough and big enough and he got out, he became a hustler. And then he got really big enough
And he started using what he had learned to extort people and compromise and everything else to the levels where he had Navy admirals compromised. I mean, there was nobody ever that I saw that was bigger and better than Skull Murphy.
He had Hoover compromised.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Very definitely. But, and if you read the story that's on the computer about Ed Skull Murphy, there's a question, and I know the writer, where what made Skull change? And when we had the State Select Committee on Crime, he's the one that told Rubenstein there was two detectives, but the one guy, you know, they had to get a hold of was me. And I never forget, he called me to tell me there's a guy coming to see you. By now, they had buried me up at the 26th Precinct in Harlem to get me off the, out of the picture. And when Rubenstein called me, I met him at a bar on 110th Street and Broadway. It was a old-fashioned nightclub. And when I walked in there, there was Rubenstein, and he told me that Skull had called and told me he was going to call me. And when we got done, I went back to the precinct, and I walked in, and the lieutenant, his name was Hughes, said, "Rothstein, I don't know what you did this time, but," he says, "I can't even talk to you. You're out of here." And that was how I got brought into the State Select Committee on Crime by the governor of New York over the head of the police commissioner and mayor.
We're going to talk a little bit so people understand. You say you didn't know anything, but the one thing that growing up in a small town in Minnesota, flyover country, they call us, you learned something else, which is integrity and being what being a true Christian is. Can you talk about that and how that helped you, even though you were clueless on the underground?
Actually, it was a cult. We were part of a cult here. It was, everything was run by the church. Every facet of your life centered on the church. And basically, there was a priest here by the Father Cyril Ortman, who taught us the basic principles of life. And he was a very simple man, but I got to know him. And then later, as I got deeper into this, I remembered many of the things that he taught us. And it wasn't any great religious thing. I'm just talking about the facts of life. And my parents and my grandfather and stuff. And like I said, then I ended up in the United States Navy, and I got into all kinds of weird stuff there. And that's why when I got to New York, I had an understanding, but I never, ever believed in my wildest dreams what I would see when I became a cop in Midtown New York.
And this is what we're trying to educate people on in general. It's just the how incredible some of this information is.
Well, yes, and that's why I've had people here that said, "How can it be that you came from here, ended up where you were, and are back here now?" And I must admit, yes, but there were things that happened. And one of the things that really got me started in the shadowy world was I couldn't speak English till I went to school here. Everything was German. And when I got to learn English, I was in school, but when I got in the Navy, we went to Hamburg, Germany, and, they needed an interpreter. Since my education and my German wasn't, formal, there was no real record of it. So I was assigned to, make sure that no bad publicity came out. I was given a chunk of money. And if there was a problem, take care of it. And that's what got me into it when I went in behind the Berlin wall to buy the freedom of a couple of spies. That's where I first learned of, the abilities that I, got into it. And then the Bay of Pigs stuff came and all that. That's a whole nother angle to this. But that's why when I got in the street, and I had some very good cops that taught me the basics, of staying alive. And then when I got into this prostitution thing, I said, it was a whole new world. Nobody knew. They didn't even know, like now, the people and even the cops don't know what a pimp is. When we got the original thing, when the cop, Anthony Campisi, was murdered by a pimp, the intelligence division gave us a file on pimps. They were all Murphy men. And the average person here, I'll guarantee you, don't even know what a Murphy man is, and they tend to speak about their expertise in trafficking. Give me a break.
What is a Murphy man?
A Murphy man is a guy who would go up to a John and say, listen, I got a girl up in the room so-and-so. Give me $25 and, you know, I'll even hold your money because these girls will rob you. And he'd go up to the floor and they'd say, this was the west side of Manhattan, it was Irish. You go to the door, says Murphy. So they were called Murphy men because when they got there, somebody, old lady, would open the door. And it was a ripoff. But when they caught these guys, they had pimped. They had offered to sell. That was what a pimp was. And that's when the police department realized, wait a second, we got to figure this out. And there were good cops. I'll tell you, I could have never done what I did without the help of hundreds of New York cops, guys that dedicated their life. Many of them were totally destroyed for doing it. So that's how this starts.
And that led into all this church stuff, and they helped you with yep. that as well.
Yes, there were cops that worked with me on this. I was the only one that was there from day one till the day we got stopped with the State Select Committee on Crime. But through the ways, I had many partners, as I call it, guys that worked with us. So just some of the most honorable cops you could find. But it was, and not only New York cops, there were federal agents and everything, but it cost everybody that got into this their careers.
Why did it not cost you your career? How did you stay alive and continue?
Well, that we won't go into, but it happened. And I did not survive. I was retired. When we got done with the State Select Committee on Crime, an old lieutenant who by this time is a deputy inspector, and it was a friend of mine, I had worked with him, came to me after I got done with the Select Committee on Crime, said, I have an offer you can't refuse. You retire or.
So you knew you had.
Yeah, and that happened like that book with the one there, Times Square. He ended up living in Mexico. Another cop ended up going to Italy. You know, you had David Dirk. He spent time over in Sweden or wherever he was. I mean, this is what happened. So, and nobody ever wants to talk about that. Talk about the FBI agents that worked with us on the first organized investigation we did on pimping. We took a list of the 12 biggest pimps in the United States, the 12 biggest. We convicted 11 of them. The 12th guy, the minute the word got out, that man disappeared. And never to be seen. Even his girls didn't know where he went. But we convicted him. When it was over, everybody was gone. So this is why I think the public should know, and why in my resolution that the city of St. Martin wrote up, one of the resolutions is you got to protect the cops, the prosecutors and such who take on and do a legitimate investigation. Locking up popcorn pimps and lot lizard pimps is not fighting trafficking. It is, because you're saving a lot of victims. But going after the big guys is a whole different story.
Yeah, and those are the cases where yeah. the cops get
yeah.
taken
and
down.
And that's where the human compromise comes in. You know, sure, a girl working the truck stops and that can compromise a truck driver, but that's not going to amount to anything. But when you get the ones where you're working the real... And know the difference between what's a pimp and a procurer and that type of stuff is so important.
Now let's talk about the Catholic Church. So you were given this anonymous tip to go yep. look in this room yep. with these documents. Yep. You started talking yep. about what was in the documents. Can you yep. continue again and explain what was in the documents and then what you did with that information?
Well, when I got that information, naturally, it was for me. And...
What do you mean it was for you?
Because it was given to me. And because of the way we were working, at that point already in 1971, we knew we couldn't put some of this stuff in the police files because people would go there and look at it and use it to extort people. So we had a very special system of investigating and how the records and where the records went. And in this particular case, it was my information. I was the only one that went there that day. And that was my information. And when I got back, some of my people I was working with, I let them know that I had it. And it took us into that. But by this time, we also had independent information like Father Bruce Ritter with Covenant House, where he was helping children, you know, and this. And we had gotten information about all the priests. We stopped priests. There was a Father Kelly and with a little boy and such. So we knew what was going on. But this verified the level of it. And again, like I said, my job was to find out what was happening. So I took this information and started working with it and developed a working relationship. In fact, my very first thing with Father Bruce Ritter was I was sent to investigate him when he first started on the lower east side to help children. Because right away, somebody was trying to stop it for a good reason. And eventually, he was the guy that we ended up working with in our human trafficking because he had this Covenant House where there were all kinds of victims and stuff. And that's how we got into that. But independent of that, we also had come up with all the information that dovetailed off of this, which was called a good name to cover it up was the Son of Sam case, which got into the stuff with the occult and that, which is all, you can't have an occult if you don't believe in God, you know. And we got into all that stuff. And it was, again, it was a learning process. Plus the informants that I was developing, like Skull Murphy, and there were dozens of them guys and girls. And that's how we got into finding out what was going on in the church.
Now, was the church heavily involved with the occult as well, segments of it?
Yes, because it's a church, you know, and you have these segments that break off. Was it ever sanctioned? Not that I ever heard of, but yet you had this.
And sacrificing and stuff?
Oh, that we came up with all of that. I'm the only one that ever interviewed a high priestess. I actually interviewed, and that's a long story on how I got her out of the federal penitentiary and everything. And eventually when it came out was when the college kid was sacrificed in Matamoros, Mexico. Till then, the FBI denied, and his name was Ken Lanning, that anything like this was ever had. There was no proof of it. And when that boy was sacrificed, there was a reporter there who saw the cigar butt laying there. And in the case of Shelley Bloom, when he was murdered, there was a cigar butt at the crime scene. I had no idea till the high priestess pointed it out. She says, oh, you cleanse the body with Cuban cigar smoke before and after the death and sacrifice and all that. So this reporter saw the cigar butt. He says, this is a sacrifice. And evidently, eventually it was proven to be, and the guy who sacrificed him ended up killing himself or whatever. But this is just a short sample of all the different things that we came across. And it traveled out here, and you have right here at St. Cloud State, Lee Gilbertson writing about the smiley face killers, the satanic killings where these boys are drowned in rivers. That's all part of that. We originally had called that the Interstate 9094 murders. And then when Detective Gannon, another New York detective, stumbled on this, and they ended up working on and came up with the smiley face. Yes, the occult came up with this. You know, once this information and the Son of Sam case, that was what they finally called it. But that was the cover-up because the Son of Sam case was only a very small part of the whole bigger picture of all these cults and stuff that were going on.
How much of the cults that you ran into were actually placed in the Catholic Church as part of the pedophile network to compromise the church versus just a fragment on its own?
I never found that they were placed in.
Okay.
That I never found, no. And that's why a person has to understand the difference. The only thing I know is that the pedophiles were placed in the church. The cult, we never had that. It might have been, I don't know, but no, I only talk about what I personally was involved in. So that I cannot answer. But I know it existed because I identified the Son of Sam was only one part of it which came out of the Process Church, and they ended up in Kanab, Utah. In 1976, they started moving west when they found out that I was on to them. And then in 78, they arrested Berkowitz. And in the book right there, Ultimate Evil by Maury Terry, he's one guy that independently had verified much of the stuff I had. I was brought back to New York in 1996, I think it was, to go over this case. And there were people who had been in the police department that told Sergeant Kevin Murphy from the Yonkers Police Department, get that Rothstein out of here. We don't need him reopening this case because he knows the truth. And there were other operations. There was the one in Pelham, New York. There was the one in Queens. There was one in Staten Island with Calvin DeViver. I mean, there were many different operations, but we had gotten into it.
And the one that was operating here moved to Utah, and that one's still operating.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They're untouchable, right?
Basically, yeah. I had one of their victims. I used to do a radio show out of Colorado with Michael Corbin, and they listened to that show. And I ended up with one of the victims from Kanab, Utah, coming here. She spent 3 weeks in the area. She stayed here and would be here every day and gave me the information from the inside that verified and matched the stuff that I had had, such as the car boy being killed in Minot, North Dakota, and, you know, all the different things, Jeffrey Dahmer. See how all of that ties in with this here? This is all connected.
And Jeffrey Dahmer, although he was a serial killer and just a weirdo, he was
people was part of the operation. What do you mean?
So it was it a cover story?
Yeah, he was the same thing in Milwaukee. Right there, the book, Malachi Martin. Malachi Martin, Father Fiore, and Father Kunz had stumbled into this. Father Kunz was murdered. I knew Malachi Martin. I know Father Fiore. They all worked. I was doing this investigation as a New York detective. Remember, I said I was cut loose. I had an unlimited expense account, and I could travel anywhere I had to without telling anybody where I was going. And that's why I came out and spent the time personally here. Here I had a good cover. I was home on vacation, you know, so...
Get this vital 30-page ebook from Drs. Ryan Wolfert and Isaac Jones, How to Avoid and Heal the Toxic Brain and Learn Proven Natural Solutions to Overcoming Brain Diseases and Disorders. The first step toward healing and preventing brain disorders is to understand where you're encountering toxins. Identifying and eliminating them is essential to healing and reversing brain diseases. This 30-page ebook will walk you through your kitchen and all the various ways it can hurt you and how to protect yourself. Plus, it will provide you with a list of 8 superfoods to help you become superhuman. And be sure to join us on December 3rd for the start of the free online Superhuman Brain Masterclass. Over 30 experts gather to provide you with proven solutions to heal and upgrade your brain to high performance for life. Click the link below to get immediate access to the 30-page ebook, How to Avoid and Heal the Toxic Brain. And get started on better health today.